Nofo.
Hey guys, I'm Casey Armstrong. This is WMAP, the world's most amazing people.
Host Casey Armstrong has a really good heart, and I think he actually really cares what the people have to say. And I think that the idea has been great, and all these people have the opportunity to really share their stories and get their words out. I love WMAP because I hear stories that inspire me.
I happen to be of the belief that everyone, doesn't matter what it is, it's how you look at it. This is WMAP, the world's most amazing people.
Right, guys, it's Kelly. I'm back with you. I have Capriana also here with me.
Hi, Kelly.
Hi. And we have a great guest that I want to bring to the show. She's an amazing author, and she wrote the book Raising the Bottom, Making Mindful Choices in a Drinking Culture. And it's an award-winning book that won the 2017 Best Book Awards in the category of Women's Health and placed as a finalist in the category of Addiction and Recovery. And in 2018, it also won the International Book Awards in the same category. And she's also a speaker, so let's welcome her to the show. Lisa Boucher, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me, Kelly.
Yes, thank you so much for being on the show. I'm really excited to speak with you. I kind of want to jump right into it and ask you if you could tell us about your book.
Well, I wanted to write a book about, I've been in recovery 29 years, and I'm also the child of an alcoholic. My mother, she hit a very low bottom, mostly because doctors kept misdiagnosing her as bipolar, manic depressive, and her addiction started with Valium, escalated with alcohol. So I sobered up in my early 20s, and I got sober when most people would never think to get sober, because I didn't drink every day, and I wasn't hiding bottles. And so I think we have this image of what addiction often looks like. And it's usually only the tail end of addiction that people are familiar with. And so I wanted to write a book that highlighted women, primarily women. There's a few men in it. But, 80% of the alcoholics are functional. They have jobs. They have families. And so those are the people I wanted to talk about and I wanted to highlight. So it's not only my story, but there's 10 other women in the back of the book, their stories, and these are women who were doctors, nurses, moms, teachers. One was a jewelry maker. One used to own a jewelry store. So these are people that, from the outside, all the props are in place. They look well. They speak well. They dress well. But they're falling apart behind the facade when, they get home at night. So nobody seems to want to talk about what alcoholism can look like in someone who's functional and why we can address it earlier than waiting until everything is completely destroyed.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And again, because alcohol is something that is so accepted in society, it's something that we see as being very normal. It's something that's very easy to attain. You know, we don't have to go to someone behind a shady building to get it. We can walk into a store and buy it. A lot of times we don't realize it's a problem, as you said, until there's, bottles that are being hidden and we're keeping all these secrets, So sometimes it's hard to identify, and which is why I kind of wanted to ask you, maybe you can tell us some of the early symptoms of problem drinking, because I think a lot of people don't really know about that.
Well, I think one of the first early symptoms can be problematic relationships. If you have problems, if you're in your third marriage, alcohol is usually the underlying thing. If you have problems with people at work, at every job you go to, so relationship problems, if you're feeling depressed, anxious, irritable, unhappy, the first thing you should look at is, are you drinking too much? Are you taking anti-anxiety pills? Because the doctors won't tell you these kinds of things. They will just prescribe more medication. And I see this, I'm also an RN, so I see this happening over and over. So early symptoms are your inability to regulate your emotions. That's how alcohol impacted me. I could not Well, it took me a long time to get through my undergrad degree. So that was a sign. I had very little discipline, couldn't seem to stick with anything. Mm-hmm. With people that, you know, if your highs and lows, I mean, I was either angry or crying or, you know, there was all these emotions that were up and down, and that's not my normal in sobriety. I'm very even keeled. So the alcohol was affecting me that way, but I didn't realize at first that that was the alcohol. I blamed it on my external surroundings, or we tend to blame our job or our spouse or our boyfriend or girlfriend or whatever. We just look for other things to blame instead of looking at the alcohol, because alcohol tends to be, like you were saying, it is so socially acceptable. The microbreweries that are exploding everywhere, the wine bars, I mean, it's on and on. I was talking to a woman today who's trying to get recovery, and she said she never realized how painful it was for her to just watch anything on TV, Netflix, Amazon, whatever, because so many movies and shows, there's a lot of alcohol. So the alcohol companies last year, in 2016, I'm sorry, spent $412 billion on advertising. So we are getting these messages everywhere you go, and it's primarily targeted to young women that are more fluent, that, you know, they're working, they're making money, they have the means, and they're the primary buyers of wine. Well, that didn't just happen. That's targeted advertising that is sucking everybody in, and you're seeing more and more lives that, you know, I it's just painful to hear so many people that they're just unhappy. And I would say, if you are unhappy, if you are depressed, the first thing you should look at is, are you drinking? Because it makes no sense to go to the doctor and get antidepressants while you continue to drink a depressant. Alcohol is a depressant. Yeah. So that right there, and if the thought of not drinking terrifies you, well, that's probably your problem. Because a normal social drinker, if they found that alcohol was adversely affecting them, they would say, well, I guess I better not drink anymore. Or maybe I'll just drink at Christmas, or if I want to do a toast on New Year's. But it's not going to be a problem for them to walk away from it. But if you find that, like I said, you're depressed, but you can't walk away from it, then your problem is probably underlying budding alcoholism, alcohol abuse, whatever the case may be. You could call it what you want, but the remedy is to not drink.
Yeah, and as you said, that can be so difficult when that's, you know, what most of the people in our lives are doing. You know, oh, what are you doing after work? Oh, we're going out for drinks, or the holidays, people are drinking. And for someone who's trying to get sober, that can be really tough. You know, you don't want to have to avoid family functions. You don't want to have to avoid people. But sometimes you have to separate yourselves from the things you want to be around just to be able to get that time in where you can kind of stop, you know, where you can stop drinking and you can get
Well, you're exactly right, Kelly. Mm-hmm. If someone's really serious about getting sober, sometimes we do have to step back. I mean, in my early recovery, we used to go to a derby party every year, and I loved it. But I didn't go for the next 2 years because I wasn't comfortable with it, and there was just no reason for me to go because there was just a lot of alcohol there. But I will say, after I got strong in recovery, I go and do what I want to do. I don't shy away from things. Now, I have no interest anymore in sitting around a bar like I used to, so that sort of thing. And my family, they all still drink, and our holidays are, there's a lot of alcohol, and I had to set some boundaries. Like, in my home, I love to cook, and so I said, you know, the booze has to go downstairs. And we have a bar downstairs, and if that's where y'all want to hang out, that's fine. But I don't want it in the kitchen in my face. I don't want to look at bottles all over the kitchen counter. So I learned how to work within that. But, you know, early on, and I guess here's a really big point I want to make, is as adults, people should not have to justify when they're not drinking. And so many times, even my young son, he's in the business world, and he said, he was out at a business meeting with a bunch of his boss and upper-level people, and everybody is all about, here, have a drink, do a shot, you know. And if you're someone in early recovery, that is really hard to navigate. And so my thing is why don't we start talking more about why don't people consider that maybe not everybody drinks? And some people don't drink for other reasons, not because they have a problem with alcohol. They just don't drink, but they're still questioned. You know, no one, if you quit eating sugar, people say that's fantastic and they want to hear all about it. If you tell them you quit drinking, the first thing out of their mouth is, what's wrong?
Yeah.
Why aren't you drinking? Why can't you drink? And it's almost like they don't want, a lot of people get very uncomfortable around people who aren't drinking because it almost shines a mirror in their face, and I think it makes them uncomfortable. And in my 29 years of recovery, the only people who have been really uncomfortable with me not drinking are people who had their own alcohol problems. So in a lot of ways, you're just outing yourself. It's like an adult should not have to explain why they choose not to drink.
Yeah, I think that is so true. I want to give our listeners your website, which is raisingthebottom.com. Now, where else can our listeners find your book?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at L. Boucher Author, and I'm also on Facebook at Raising the Bottom, Lisa Boucher, award-winning author. Google any of those, and you should be able to find it. I've got a book Facebook page.
Wow. Well, Lisa, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. I mean, it's been amazing to speak with you. You really make some really excellent points, and I really am glad our listeners got to hear what you had to say, and they'll be able to find some hope in your message as well.
Well, I hope so, Kelly, and thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you so much. Take care. Have a great weekend.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Wow. I mean, there's just so much that she said that, you know, I feel like I've been able to relate to in my life, and I feel like so many of our listeners will be able to relate to as well.
Of course. Yeah. Myself as, you know, I'm young, but I definitely don't drink as much as a lot of people my age do.
Mm-hmm.
So I definitely understand where she's coming from.
Yeah, definitely. And I've definitely been in those positions. And, you know, when I've told people that I don't drink, they've questioned me. And, you know, it's always an uncomfortable thing. And as she said, I think we can educate people a little bit more. So I'm so mm-hmm. glad we got to speak with her. All right, guys, keep tuning in. We have Abby Hanneman coming on at 3:30. We have Debbie Bowling at 4 p.m. and Shalanda Tukes Wilder at 4:30 p.m. And stay tuned to WMAP Radio for our incredible Best of Long Island series. All the best health and wellness services, restaurants, and cosmetic surgeons. March through April, all on WMAP Radio, the world's most amazing people.